Game on 2FM. With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to you, Jenny Green, for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of November, and this is Game On. Coming up on the show, Richie Sadlier and Paul Corrie are with us to review and preview the Champions League action.
There's Ronaldo. Van de Beek pulls it back in. Didn't look, though. Ronaldo on the end of it, trying to get an angle, trying to get free. Greenwood is there. Ronaldo! He's done it again! I don't believe it! He is just a freak of nature. The greatest goal-scoring machine the Champions League has ever seen. It's 2-2.
And we'll also get Richie and Paul's take on Damien Duff's new role at Shelburne.
Very exciting, a bit uncomfortable as well, a bit fearful, but that's where I thrive really. So I'm really looking forward to the challenge. Yes, I only signed last night, but I started a couple of days ago and probably haven't slept since, so enjoying it.
I'd say he's not going to get a lot of sleep at all. Frustration is growing in the world of basketball as the juvenile game has been left in the lurch. In a head coach, Darren McGovern joins us.
Comes off the screen, gets it out to Hayes for three. O'Brien comes up with a rebound, gets it to Rowe. It's got to be three now, Jay. And it's Kieran Rowe for three! What a shot from Kieran Rowe!
And plus, with drama escalating in the world of Irish boxing, journalist Chris McNulty will bring us up to speed.
How I went as a professional, give me a bigger platform, a bigger name, everything. I think even if I had won gold, I wouldn't have had as big of, you know, springboard into the pro game than that. So I don't think it's affected me in that sense. But in terms of my lifetime, you know, goal, which was to become Olympic champion, I'll never get that back. I'll never get the chance at that ever again. And that's something that will live with me for the rest of my life.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweeting at GameOn2FM. Now, Paul Corrie is with me in studio and we're also joined on the line by Richie Sadlier. Paul, we're going to have to start with Ronaldo because there's been so much commentary about whether or not he is the cure or the curse for Manchester United. He did step up again last night. We heard Darren Maloney in the commentary there saying he's an absolute goal-scoring machine. What's your take on what he's doing for Manchester United?
Yeah, it's a funny one, Murray, because, I mean, when things and results don't seem to be going their way, it seems to be Ronaldo and Ronaldo can't press from the front. That is a line that people are tending to go with. But, I mean, if you look at the results and you look, you know, particularly in the Champions League, he's actually carrying the team. Particularly in big moments, you think back to Villarreal and that game against Atalanta at home. And once again, he's produced last night. The performances themselves lack structure. The team lacks structure. There never seems to be any sort of consistency to the way they play. So what they are relying on is individual brilliance at different moments during a game. And I thought particularly when you look at both the goals, Ronaldo is exuding brilliance in different moments in different games. And the first goal was an unbelievable bit of play. There were ball around the corner from Greenwood into Fernandez. Fernandez's little touch took everybody out of the game, including the goalkeeper, and it was a superb touch and finish. The touch was probably something, and Rio Ferdinand, you might have heard last night speaking about it, something that was probably a little underrated, just his composure in front of goal. And then, I mean, the goal in the 91st minute just sums him up. For most, it's not even a half chance, but he stays cool. The execution to just watch the ball onto your foot and then execute with such good technique, it just says a lot about the man. And if you were to take his goals away from Manchester United, there'd be a far different proposition, particularly in the Champions League.
There are two games underway in the Champions League already. FC Porto are leading AC Milan 1-0 and Real Madrid have just taken the lead against Shakhtar Donetsk. 20 minutes gone in both games. Richie Sadlier joins us now. Richie, you were part of the television coverage last night. Just on Ronaldo, I guess, look, there's a couple of questions. Where do you think Manchester United would be without Cristiano Ronaldo? And where does his goals last night leave United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
It's a bizarre conversation in one way, that people are trying to work out whether Ronaldo is a positive or a negative impact on a team that he's playing for and a team that he's scoring so many goals for, and like last night, scoring goals that are crucially important. He's rescuing points and sealing wins very late on. But I went through some of the figures today, and I may have got some of these wrong, but I don't think I have. He's been involved in 12 games so far since he joined the club, five of which they've lost. So it's not a great return in terms of the team performance during his time there. In terms of the goals he scored, obviously he's outstanding. But I had a look, just for comparison, at the 12 games United played competitively before Ronaldo were there. They had a goal difference of +9, they scored 26, and they only conceded 17. Now, if you think Ronaldo coming into your team is going to bring you more goals, get you more points, seal more wins, you would assume all those figures would increase. The opposite is the case. In the 12 games since Ronaldo has been there, they've only scored 20, which is less, and they've conceded 21, which is far more. Their goal difference is -1. That's a swing of 10 in the wrong way since Ronaldo came. So if you're limiting the conversation to Ronaldo's contribution or his value to United in terms of numbers and in terms of goals, well, then it's a negative impact, because overall they're scoring far fewer and teams are scoring more against them. They've lost more, they've conceded more, and they keep fewer clean sheets. But there's no denying, like the stuff that Paul said there, like what's astonishing to watch is the level of consistency that he has in front of goal when he gets opportunities. And so much is made of his age. And on most people, when you discuss someone of his age in football, you start to talk about things like lack of conditioning or fatigue, or he runs out of energy, or he can't last 90 minutes. But that's so many of his key contributions. Like Ireland suffered against Portugal when he did it, but they're late on in the game at times when you know your legs are starting to tire, when your concentration levels drop, when so many players make mistakes at that part of the game because they're knackered. He doesn't seem to, like, the composure and the accuracy and the precision, it doesn't seem to wane the longer the game goes on, and it certainly hasn't waned the older he gets. But there is a compromise that every manager who plays Ronaldo has to just navigate. He doesn't do a lot, and he's very disinterested when the opposition have the ball, and that's fine. You know what you get when you get Ronaldo. But the pressure that puts in the wider team then, you kind of go down to a scenario where it's not quite as bad as you have 10 men when the opposition have the ball, but it's not far off. Like, we can put loads of footage in front of viewers anytime we show Man United, or Ronaldo kind of walking just kind of disinterestedly around the middle area of the pitch or the attacking area of the pitch when the opponents have the ball. And if we're talking about Manchester United being a serious team, like, they're a huge club, if they've serious ambitions for trying to push for a title or to go far in the Champions League, like, is there any other dressing room that has those ambitions that would tolerate that from any other player? I know, Marie, your household has a big interest in what Jurgen Klopp does. Do you think any of the forwards that Liverpool have been given any kind of license from Jurgen Klopp? Just switch off. You're not that important to us when we don't have the ball. Come alive when we give you the ball. It doesn't happen in Chelsea's dressing room. It certainly doesn't happen in any dressing room run by Guardiola these days. So that's a conundrum for Solskjaer to solve. But Ronaldo isn't the only issue here with United. Like, the goalkeeper made a header last night for the first goal. Maguire was culpable for the second goal. In midfield, Pogba had a really, really off night again. So there are loads of issues for Solskjaer to manage. And, of course, there's Solskjaer himself. But Man United are compelling viewing at the moment. You can't take your eyes off them, because as bad as they're playing, as consistently bad as they're playing, they're picking up results that the performances don't deserve, and those results are keeping the manager in charge. And I think he's increasingly looking like a manager who doesn't belong at a club at that level. But as long as Ronaldo keeps doing those things that he did last night, we're going to keep talking about Ronaldo, and as conversations to be framed as this really positive, remarkable, record-breaking fella is just keeping going.
Well, it is highly entertaining, I have to say. Like, last
night
was amazing. Just great viewing, like, compelling, as you said, so exciting, unpredictable, waiting for something to happen, that sense of anticipation was on the pitch. And I know you mentioned Jurgen Klopp there, Richie, and look, obviously Mo Salah is performing at an unbelievable level, but I went to see PSG on Friday night, and Messi wasn't dissimilar to Ronaldo. Like, he does a huge amount of switching off. Like, he does not go back at all. He walks around, he'll turn it on and do something amazing, but he has been tolerated by Pochettino, and in a way those two players are probably in a bit of a league of their own. Like, Salah isn't there yet. I mean, obviously he's performing way better than everybody at the moment. So like there is one other player anyway that is quite like him on the pitch and has been indulged by a manager. Neymar actually wasn't doing a huge amount of tracking back either. He was doing more rolling around than he was tracking back. But that element is there in certain teams. But the question
is... It is. And I think actually the issue is... I mean, think back to any of the conversations we've had previously or most of the discussions about Man United over the last 12 or 18 months. Like, they're strong going forward. They've got individual brilliance in attacking areas. But structurally or defensively, they looked open. In midfield, they look a little bit open. They don't look solid. They don't look sound. You look like a team that you can get at them. And if you think that's going to be a really noticeable thing for the rest of us to be focusing on, you would assume internally within Old Trafford they've been trying to address it. And if they have, they've repeatedly failed. Nothing they've tried has worked. And then in the transfer window most recently, where it was screaming out to get a player that would make a material, like a really meaningful difference in the middle of midfield to make them a bit more solid and defensively more sound, they didn't address that issue. They went out and signed the fella they've been chasing for 2 years for €85 million, and they pretty much haven't given him much game time. They got him because Ronaldo arrived in later, and Ronaldo exacerbates the issue that was there before, which is that United are a team that are easy to get at. You're right. Messi doesn't do a hell of a lot. Neymar does a little bit more than the two of them, but there's nowhere near the Salah levels of work rate or any other top elite striker at a really serious dressing room that are pushing to win the Champions League. But I don't know if this United team can afford not to have everyone working at 100%, because loads of the players that we've seen recently, even at 100%, aren't producing the kind of performances individually or collectively that are going to come anywhere near to winning any kind of serious trophy this season.
Paul Varane went off with an injury. We saw Harry Maguire have another poor game. They seem to be quite consistent now in his level of poor performances. And Pogba, again, really disappointing. And the conversation about the central defensive midfielder, the lack of one, has kind of moved on a little bit now. But what do you think is the biggest problem for Manchester United? Okay, Ronaldo aside, is it the defence or is it the midfield?
Yeah, you could probably take a bit of a combination of the both, Marie. I think one probably feeds into the other in the fact that, you know, they're so easy to play through, particularly in that middle third of the park, and McTominay or Fred, when they're in there, don't seem to be given adequate cover to the back four or five, depending on what they go with. And then they look at sixes and sevens when they're trying to defend. They always seem to be firefighting. They never seem to be kind of averting the danger before it happens. Everything seems to be very, very reactive. And particularly with Varane missing now, probably for the weekend, you would worry for them, because he's probably the one who seems to give a bit of a calming influence to that back four, back five. And I mean, Maguire last night, particularly for that Zapata goal, his lack of awareness was so worrying. The second the ball went over the top and when Bailly got done in behind, he was so slow to react. And I also thought De Gea could have come off his line as well and given him a bit more of a dig out. So between the centre halves, the centre midfielders, and that kind of goalkeeper department, they always seem to be struggling. And you know, not many of them are playing with a huge level of confidence, which is also something to worry about. And you know, they played Atlanta last night, but you saw what happened when they played against Liverpool. And your worry would be, if you're a Manchester United fan going into a game against City where they move the ball and they move your midfield and your back four or five around, they're going to leave gaps. And when you've got quality that City have, the worry is that they're going to put a few past them. So it's hard to pinpoint whether exactly who or where the problem is. It seems to be something that just seems to be going through the squad at this moment in time. And I mean, that goes down to individuals, but also goes down, I think, to the structure that's being given to that squad. And I always think that they look as if they're disorganized and all over the place, and just, like I said, firefighting, as opposed to kind of being in control of where they are on the pitch.
Richie, with your psychologist hat on, how do you explain a person like Paul Pogba and just the fact that we know that he has brilliance inside of him, but he doesn't show it very often? How can Ole Gunnar Solskjaer right Paul Pogba's wrongs?
I don't know if he can, is the short answer. How you might approach a player like Pogba, he's not the first footballer we've ever watched that is a little bit infuriating or is inconsistent, or as Liam Brady described him last night, he's just unreliable. There are loads of footage, loads of memories we all have of Pogba giving performances where you go, that's why that's why there was 80, 90 million pound paid for this fella. Like he has been exceptional at times, and he shows brilliant technique and a brilliant distribution at times. And then there's games like last night where you think, this is a fella who looks like he's disinterested. It's a fella who lacks motivation, a fella who struggles with concentration. And given the fact that he's loaded with so much talent and ability, you kind of have to question, like, does this fella really care? And then you chuck in then the stuff we know about him off the field, which is his contract situation is up for grabs. This is kind of half comments either from him or his agent over the years, which lead you to wonder whether or not he's actually happy at Old Trafford, whether he's any intention of staying there. And I think in the situation United are in, there's so much focus on the manager. The results have been so bad. The performances have been really poor. You want everyone who takes to the field, obviously, to do their best. And some of them are lacking in confidence. Some of them are playing, but maybe with lack of belief, and maybe from the manager, lack of direction. But you would expect them all to have full commitment. You need them all to be absolutely convinced that they're going to give their all. And just last night, you look at Pogba, and you just have to question whether or not he actually cares, because somebody that good can't play so bad so regularly. So I don't know, is the short answer, whether Solskjaer has any powers persuasive enough or strong enough to get Pogba to go from the player we've seen so often now at this stage to be something else. Like, we're all willing him to be this consistent, mature, reliable, dependable midfielder who can command games in the way that he can on his best days. You want him to do that all the time. But he's nowhere near it. And we're nearing the point now where his contract is up. We're nearing the stage where he can talk openly to other clubs. I don't think Man United should really be breaking the bank or going too hard to keep him at the club any longer, because he's been there long enough to show you exactly what you're going to get if he stays there any longer. And I don't think what he's shown has been enough to warrant extending his contract by numerous years, which is going to cost you a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Richie. He's absolutely infuriating to watch. A bit like Chelsea last night, I'd say, Paul, if you were a Chelsea fan. They made hard work of it against Malmo. One of those nights for them.
Yeah, I mean, they were in total control, Marie, for the whole 90 minutes. I mean, that kind of laden problem from last season of actually failing to put the ball in the net was quite evident again last night, and Havertz coughed up probably three or four really good chances. Yeah, it's the type of game where you feel as if Lukaku was playing, he probably would have bagged six or seven because there was that many chances created. But I thought they looked in control. They created an awful lot, like I mentioned. It was a good goal, actually, really good ball down the line from Havertz. Hudson-Odoi got on the end of it and flashed the ball across the 6-yard box with a simple finish for Ziyech. But I mean, Malmo never troubled them. It's probably the best game I've seen Loftus-Cheek having a long time. And I mean, there's been plenty made about Loftus-Cheek over the last 6 or 7 years, and I think over the last probably 6 or 7 weeks we've seen a bit of what he's capable of. So I mean, the strength and depth in that squad is frightening, and you know, they're still down a couple of players, but they did enough to get through last night, and you know, they've done enough in the group stages. It'll be interesting now just how it plays out, because I mean, everybody knows the advantage of finishing top in that group, so it'll be a battle between themselves and Juventus, and that fixture at Stamford Bridge is going to be an interesting one. But things are looking quite rosy for Chelsea at the moment, keeping a hell of a lot of clean sheets, look really solid at the back, and you always feel in that final third that at some point they'll score goals.
There is 33 minutes gone in those two early kickoffs in the Champions League. Porto are still leading AC Milan 1-0 and Real Madrid 1-0 against Shakhtar Donetsk. Liverpool in action later on tonight, Richie, against Atletico Madrid. A place in the last 16 can be secured if they do get that win against Atletico. But they weren't as convincing as we've seen of late at the weekend, drawing 2-2 against Brighton. Pretty frustrating performance, really, from them. How do you think they'll stack up tonight?
Well, I suppose that the competition so far, they are in a strong position. You look at the group table, you look at the previous results, you look at the fact that they went to Spain and beat Atletico in the last round of the game. So I haven't seen, I don't think the team sheet is out yet. I wonder whether the manager will use the squad in the way that he has in previous games. I remember actually his comment before the opening game against AC Milan. I think Van Dijk was on the bench and a couple of others weren't. And he made the point, Klopp, beforehand of saying, I hope people don't think I'm disrespecting the opposition here. We've got to use our players sparingly throughout the season. So given the really strong position they're in, I'll be interested to see what the team sheet is. But they made a little bit harder work of it than they needed to in the leg in Spain. They were a strong position 2-0, much like they were at the weekend. They were in a strong position against Brighton, and something just happened. They allowed Brighton back into the game. But it's I think a win tonight for Liverpool puts them in the ideal scenario where they go into the last couple of games knowing the qualification has been secured, so they don't have to test the players that they would want to spare some game time, and they can give squad players games. But really strong position to be in.
Should there be concerns over Liverpool's defence, just given the fact that they are starting to struggle a little bit towards the end of games? And even when you think of all the times that they have met Atletico since 2008, they have never kept a clean sheet 7 games.
Yeah, I mean, Atletico are one of the top sides in European football. And, Richie was talking earlier about a lack of commitment from a Manchester United side. I mean, one thing you're guaranteed with Atletico Madrid and Diego Simeone is that there's going to be commitment. And they're a really difficult opposition to play against. They frustrate teams and they tend to be quite quick on counter-attacks, and they've got good players in the final third, the likes of João Felix, who was really good, I thought, last time out. So, Liverpool have coughed up a couple of goals, particularly against Brighton. I thought they looked a little open at times. But they've still got so much quality all over the pitch. They work really hard. They're really disciplined. I wouldn't be overly concerned about the number of goals they've conceded in the last couple of weeks. But, I mean, it's a fixture. Given how the game in Madrid finished with the lack of a handshake between the two managers and just the number of times they met over the last couple of years, there'll be certainly an element of spice to it. And I mean, listen, if Atletico were to score once or twice in that fixture, it's not a too much of a worry from Liverpool's back four. Atletico, like I mentioned, are one of the top teams in Europe, but a certainly game to look out for tonight, because they've produced some good fixtures over the last number of years.
Right, well, enough now of the Champions League. Richie, let's move on to the League of Ireland, because that's where it is happening. Big news today. It was expected, but to see Damien Duff in all the photo opportunities today with the Shelburne jersey was a pretty cool sight, I have to say. How do you think he's going to go?
I'm delighted for him, first of all. I've spoken to him about this previously, but he's his own man, and whatever he does, like, he's spoken a lot today, and anyone who's watched the press conference or heard him speak, you can pick up straight away he's got real passion for the thing, and he's really going to be fully committed. But when I've worked with him, like, on the panel now, I've known him a long time, he works so hard at everything he does. Like, even if it's a game that he's covering with RTE, the amount of work and preparation that he puts in beforehand, like, he's not a fella who cuts corners at all. And he made a comment today in one of the interviews, I think with Tony O'Donoghue, that this whole thing is about standards and maintaining standards and raising standards. So the Shells lads, like, whatever squad they're going to have, it's not fully formed obviously yet, but whatever squad they have going into next season, those players better be ready to give their all, because there won't be any, he won't allow anyone to cut corners. I do all of a sudden have sympathy for the Gary Neville Solskjaer kind of pundit manager dynamic that has been emerging over the last while, because I'll be now in a position, we all will, where we have to comment on his job performance next season. So I hope to God it goes really well for him, because I don't have to be in a position where I'm sitting in the RTE or standing on a sideline asking tough questions about his role. But I'm delighted for him.
He hasn't asked you to go in as number two, Rich, you know.
No, he knows.
Oh, look, it is great. And it was absolutely super today to see the amount of excitement around the appointment as well. Because, you know, we're talking a lot, Paul, about trying to change the perception of the League of Ireland and just to attract new fans and to keep audiences growing. And when you have somebody like Damien Duff with the star power, who's been investing in his time for nothing at underage levels in Shelburne and in Shamrock Rovers, to see him going into that position and just for it to get so much attention. Okay, we hope it goes well, but at the same time, it can only bring good to the league.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the league itself this year was probably a bit of a slog in a way, in the fact that Shamrock Rovers walked away with it, and already with this season coming to an end, people are already starting to get excited about the next. And of course, big names like Damien Duff being involved in our league is going to boost publicity of it. I mean, what Richie said there is probably something like, I was there at Shamrock Rovers when he was working with Stephen Bradley, and the one thing that really stuck out for me was just standards. You know, standards on and off the pitch whether it's, you know, being on time for training or just making sure that your boots are clean. And then also when you're training, that you're driving home and you're really working hard. That was the one thing that really stood out for me. And he will not accept. And Richie's right. You know, if you're in that squad there, whether your body fat be high or you're turning up late, you actually need to be really in tune, because it's something that Duffer drives home on a consistent basis. And just on top of that, you know, his desire to win and his desire to improve players was something that stood out as well. You know, really good on the training ground, and some managers would probably take a bit more of a back seat and maybe not get involved in training. Duffer be the complete opposite, you know, really hands on with regards to training, wants to put his own stamp on the team, and then also bringing players along on that journey and improving them. And he did that even for that short spell of time that I was there at Shamrock Rovers. He drove them on. And I think with the likes of Andrew Doyle, the owner, I know him quite well, a really successful businessman in his own way. Alan Caffrey, who's done a really good job at St. Kevin's over the number of years. I think he's found people, and he's probably found a foundation there that he can work with. And, you know, we mentioned in his interview there, it's probably something that he had on his bucket list, and this is probably a good fit for him at this moment in time.
He was great in his interviews today. I think if anyone didn't hear them, do check them out. There's many of them online. Just the honesty from him, Richie, just how nervous he was, how reluctant he was at times to take it. You know, just a little bit of insight into his mentality, the fact that he's doing a barista course, and just the fact that he's going to find it difficult, and he's well aware of that as well. But he was quite honest when asked too about that little bit of, I guess it's a reputation that he has now at this stage of not sticking around. Would that be a concern that he's, you know, he's just not going to be happy with the environment? Because I think anyone that's familiar with the League of Ireland, there are challenges that are out of your control. And Richie, you probably know from your time in St. Pat's, sometimes there's nothing that you can do about them. You just almost have to just accept them and do the best you can.
Yeah, I suppose first thing, I think it's a really good thing for the league. Like the phrase you just used, or the term you just used, Marie, there was like, he has star power. He does, in that he'll bring a lot of media attention. He might bring some extra people into watch shells. But he's also really down to earth. He's really hardworking. He's got a really humble, honest approach. And there's no nonsense with him. Like, you're not going to hear him rattling through interviews, giving out empty platitudes about the FAI or the league or the opposition or standards. If they're not up to scratch, he's gonna give you his honest view. And I think that's what the league needs. The league doesn't need a load of cheerleaders showing up at every game, just saying to everyone that it's great and you all should show up. It needs people that will drive up the standards. And part of that will be to call out some of the standards that are there. But you're right in the question you're asking. We spoke about Paul Pogba being infuriating, that there's aspects of domestic football in this country which are absolutely going to infuriate him. But I think he probably knows what they're going to be. He's not coming into this as a complete outsider who's just flown in from a different country and is learning from scratch. He's been in the Irish football culture now, and I was abroad for years, but he's immersed in it. He knows the clubs, he knows the people, he knows the FAI, he knows Irish football. So, yes, he will be driving standards internally within shells as much as he can. He'll be absolutely imposing huge standards on the players he's got, but there is, like you said, an element of accepting that things are done in a way in this club, in this league, which will infuriate him. So there will be a lot of tests on his patience and his ability to accept that certain things you just can't change in life. But I'm really looking forward to seeing how he gets on, because he's got so much passion and so much coaching, love for coaching. So the players there, I think, are particularly fortunate.
And Richie, whether you like it or not as well, I think that you're probably going to have to ask hard questions at some stage. There are going to be times when you're going to, you know, it doesn't always go to plan. Things can be rocky at times. But if anybody is well able to tackle the difficult subjects, it's you. And we're going to tackle one right now. So you were on as well to talk to us about the Don't Settle, Talk Erectile Dysfunction campaign. So this is something that you feel passionate about talking about, because people are so reluctant to discuss their problems, whether they're big problems or small problems, things that could just be on people's minds and they don't know where to turn to get help.
Yeah, do you know what? It's I think partly from my own experience of just having things over the years that I found difficult to speak about, but also working as a therapist, where you are constantly in contact with people who who talk openly about the things that they find difficult to talk about, or that they tell you about things that they've bottled up for years. And when you're dealing with anything to do with your sex life or your sexual health, a lot of people find it very difficult for understandable reasons. These are tricky conversations to have. But the message behind this campaign, as you call it, don't settle, like, talk ED. Don't put up with the symptoms. Don't stay silent. Do something. So for lads listening to this that are impacted by this, like, talk about it. Like, open up, look for solutions, look for treatments. Go to a GP, talk to a therapist, go into your pharmacist, explore the treatment options, because staying silent about something like this just keeps you further and further away from the support and from the treatments that are out there, because most cases something like this is treatable for people, but you don't find that treatment, you don't find the support, you don't alleviate the symptoms by staying quiet about it. So message is just to talk.
Okay, Richie, as always, thank you so much. And no doubt we will have you back on again sometime to talk about it. Paul, stay with us, because I do want to talk about the playoff games in the First Division of the League of Ireland a little bit later. We're going to take a very quick break now, though. Stay with us.
FM. Game on 2FM. With Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are going to turn our attention to basketball, because there is increasing frustration amongst grassroots basketball, because last week Sport Ireland informed Basketball Ireland that no games can take place unless all players, coaches and officials involved either possess a valid COVID-19 vaccination certificate or proof of having fully recovered from the illness. And since children under 12 are not being vaccinated, that has ended their hopes of playing games for the moment anyway. I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Darren McGovern, who is the AINA Super League head coach. Just first of all, Darren, did anybody see this coming? Was it a massive shock to you all?
Hello, Emery. Yeah, thanks for having me on, first of all. But yeah, it was a massive shock to everybody. We 100% didn't see anything like this coming. There wasn't a whisper. So when the news came through on Friday, it's very disappointing.
Yeah, it really must, because I think when you think of those children, so many of them for, God, 20 months, nearly 2 years now, would have had no experience of playing games. And I think as sports people, Paul Corrie is with me here as well, what you love about being involved in sport is the thought of, at some stage, after all the training, going out to go and play a game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you mentioned there, as long as these probably 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds have never got a chance to represent their club, and they were going out this weekend to maybe be the first time they get to represent the club, and maybe their first touch of a ball in the game, or the first basket, or the first rebound, and just that that general brilliant feeling that will live with them forever, I suppose, and then continue in the sport. That's the really worrying thing, and that's why I've been as vocal and as active as I can be, to try and raise awareness on this. But what I do want to mention is, like, the amazing support by clubs and coaches and parents, and how they've contacted every single TD in the country, and this has been brought up left, right and centre in the Dáil. And I'm really proud of everyone, how they've all pulled together to try and raise this issue and try and get it reversed, because I think we can all understand, adults, players, officials and coaches, to be vaccinated, to be indoors. But to hit the under-18s like this, it's rather unthoughtful. It's rather unjust, I think. And I just don't think the due diligence was actually done on this decision whatsoever.
Yeah, I guess when we think of those under-18s and those children, we think of them in school, and they're in school every day and they're mixing with other kids, and that's just the environment that they're in. And the activities after school as well, they're just almost an extension of the same environment. So it's really hard to understand why this limit has been put on the kids going to play games. You mentioned there that a lot of TDs have been raising the issue. I did see that the Taoiseach was asked in the Dáil today. He was suitably vague with his answer about it and said it's something that they're going to look at. Are you confident that this is something that is going to be overturned in the near future?
That's difficult to answer, because it depends what way you see confidence in things being overturned in the past with this government. So I would be up very, very low in my optimism, but
I don't think it's going to stop sort of the drive of us trying to try and make this achievable anyway for change.
And just even, I suppose, to move it on just a little bit, when you think of the vaccinations as well and vaccinating children, I know too, Darren, that there is an issue with even asking children are they vaccinated. So even when, if it does come in that children are going to be eligible to get the vaccination, it's going to be really hard to try and figure out who has been vaccinated and not as well, because you're not allowed to ask children whether they've had the vaccination.
Yeah, well, apparently so. Yeah, I know in school settings, I know teachers and coaches are not, they're not allowed to ask a student's vaccination status. So I don't understand how it can be any different to volunteers being allowed to ask a vaccination status. I believe that Basketball Ireland has been in contact with Sport Ireland around that sort of side of things for being able to get consent. And then apparently now it's up to each individual club to contact every player's parent to get consent to ask, can they see a COVID cert? And all that does, Marie, it adds huge amounts of pressure onto the volunteer clubs all around the country, that all they do is, you know, facilitate, you know, basketball activities to young people. So it's their social outlet, it's their mental health break, it's their physical activity break during the week. And, you know, I know you mentioned schools earlier on, and they do a fantastic job. But schools basketball is at a complete standstill. You know, I know some clubs right now can continue playing with the rules, with the vaccination only, but schools basketball is probably one of the, you know, the brightest grassroots direction that, you know, basketball takes. And it's at a standstill, and it's just not right, you know.
You must be concerned about this generation of players, though, Darren, as well, because, like, there's so much competition for sports out there as well. And we know that basketball has really grown over the last number of years and will continue to grow. But when something like this happens, players are going to get lost along the way as well. They're going to opt for sports that they that isn't any hassle, really. And this is hassle for kids now to want to go and play the game.
Yeah, and I think you're correct. So, like, basketball is one of the, you know, it's the largest indoor sport that's in the country, but it's also then on the periphery then of obviously the big, you know, the big three or big four sports that's out there that are on the field. So yeah, it's always a concern that we would lose players to them sports. It's inevitable that you lose players to other sports anyway. But I think now that the door is wide open for these players to disappear altogether. And I think that's a huge shame, because one thing I've always advocated, like, I'm a multiple sport athlete as well. When I was younger, I played football, basketball, soccer. You know, I played a large number of sports, and that helps. You know, and I understand that, you know, our best athletes right now and current Olympians, current champions, they're all multiple sport athletes. But if you take these sports away from children, are we going to get these great multiple sport athletes in the future as well? And that's a huge concern, you know, going forward. You know, especially in the female ranks, you know, we're all fully aware of, you know, how difficult it is to keep females in sport. Well, this is the easiest way to, you know, to get them out, is not to allow them to play. And it's an absolute shame.
Yeah, it really is. Hopefully, anyway, as you said, everybody has mobilised, and you would think, or like to think and like to hope, that somebody somewhere is going to listen, and that common sense will prevail. Look, I understand that the cases are going up, and there is a huge amount of concern, and a lot of them are going up in that age group as well, of the children of under 12s. But when you think, Darren, as well, of the last 20 months, the amount of responsibility that coaches have taken upon themselves to gather all the information, to do the COVID checks, to fill in the forms, to have the parents sign the kids in, that everybody has worked so hard to get to a certain place and to be able to move forward, because that's the key. We have to live with this now, and to be stalled again is really frustrating.
Yeah, no, I think you're correct there. And like that's something I would want to point out, is the fact that, like, basketball has probably implemented some of the most stringent COVID sort of regulations and guidelines, and we've stuck to them really, really well. You know, every club in the country is on the COVID tracker app. We know who's in the premises, we know who's arriving, and we know, you know, there's no teams coming in during their own time slot. They're leaving at their own time. You know, there's no interaction, mixing with other age groups, you know. So all of these measures have been in place for a long time, and it's been proven to be very successful. So I'm just concerned why the indoor sports are just getting this hammer putting down on top of them rather than all indoor settings mm-hmm. for underage people, you know, because they obviously are going to have, you know, parties, times together, you know, whether they're going to the shopping centre together or anything indoor, then obviously should be wiped out for them if this is the case. So we're very frustrated to why it's just down to indoor sports.
I hate to point it out, but it seems to be have been a pretty common theme throughout this pandemic that the indoor sports have been hit quite hard. And just before we finish up, I know that the elite level are getting to play, so you are getting to play, Darren. How has the start of the season gone for you?
Yeah, really positive for the club and Aina. You know, we've had a rocky road with a couple of really really bad injuries in the first couple of weeks, but once we've got over that, there we've been doing a little bit better, thankfully. But it's a long season, and obviously the COVID is here and it's here to stay, and I think that's going to have a huge factor come some stage in the season with teams potentially having some sort of COVID implications or not. But you know, we've put all these things in place to try and bypass all of those as well. So I think, you know, we're all pulling together, I suppose, as a basketball community for this sort of for this issue right now. It's all about the kids. You know, I don't really want to be talking too much about our activities other than, you know, making sure that every young person can have access to basketball or any indoor sport if they choose.
Yeah, well, I think that's the perfect way to leave it. And we all echo those sentiments here as well. Darren McGovern, head coach with Aina Basketball, thank you so much for joining us. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now we are going to have our second mention of the Oireachtas Committee today, but this time it is about boxing. Chairman of the IABA's Board of Directors, Ciarán Kerwin, was up in front of them today and had some questions to answer. Chris McNulty, journalist, joins us now. Chris, there's a lot going on in the world of boxing. A lot of it probably isn't getting out to the public sphere because it is quite complex. But what exactly is happening?
Well, I suppose the IABA, this was on foot of a proposal by Fine Gael Senator Micheál Carrigy. This has gone back to the month of May, where he proposed that the IABA be called in before the Oireachtas Committee. Michael Carruth then, this was, I think, in August, Michael Carruth, the CEO of the IABA, requested that meeting, which was initially meant to take place in September, be deferred until after the Irish Elite Championships. And that took us today where the IABA, the chair Ciarán Kerwin, and the CEO Fergal Carruth were before the Oireachtas Committee to answer some questions.
So what questions were they asked today, and what was of interest that came out of it? I did see quite a lot of it, and it was an hour long. They did get through a lot.
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing in terms of like the issues and the problems that have been in the IABA and are ongoing in Irish boxing, I think the unfortunate thing about today was that, you know, really didn't get into the nitty gritty of the hows and the whats and the whys, and I think there was a lot of time spent sort of needlessly going around things, and you know, I mean, we ended up talking about, you know, whitewater rafting. I mean, you know, one of the questions, you know, coming up today was as regarding that. There wasn't a whole lot in terms of those actual problems and getting to the nub of what's wrong in the IABA and what's wrong in Irish boxing. I suppose the headline grabber from it from the early part of it was that Ciarán Kerwin did admit that there were governance issues in the FEA and the IABA, and the IABA have requested that Sport Ireland conduct a review into its governance, and John Tracy from Sport Ireland confirming that review is now in fact underway. So I suppose we maybe learn a lot more about the IABA and its governance issues once that review is conducted.
Yeah, it does seem like it needs it. And Sean McGoldrick had a really good piece and the Irish Independent, where he went through a lot of questions, 20 questions altogether that need to be asked and need to be answered, really. And it's worth checking out if you're interested in this sort of thing, because he goes through all the different issues and there are a huge amount of them. But as you said there, a governance review would probably answer a lot of them, because a lot of them are about directors' meetings, how many directors are on the board, those sort of things that are quite complex. But one thing that would probably be of interest would be what's happening with Bernard Dunn, because he seems to be a lot to do with what's going on as well.
Well, I suppose Bernard Dunn, as the head of the IABA's high performance unit, Bernard has been on leave since the Olympic Games in Tokyo, and it emerged this morning. This was sort of circling in the background, and you know, there have been all sorts of things said about this in recent months since Tokyo, but confirmation today that Bernard has actually lodged a formal complaint with the IABA. Now, if you go back to pre-Tokyo, there was what was called a SWOT analysis position paper that went round various IABA members in the run-up to the Olympics. And Bernard claiming basically that document, it ran about 1,500 words and was sort of sent anonymously round the members. Bernard claiming that this sort of undermines both he and his position as the director of the high performance unit. And, you know, the IABA, you know, the word malicious was used. Kieran Kerwin today sort of suggesting that he claimed not to know who was behind it. But, you know, in a piece in this morning's Irish Times, Johnny Watterson has seen the letter that Bernard Dunn sent to the IABA. There's two individuals actually named in that letter that Bernard Dunn has sent to the IABA. So that's one strand of that in terms of Bernard Dunn's position. The other, I suppose, goes back to the most recent sort of issue that hit the headlines in terms of the World Elite Championships, which, you know, ended from an Irish point of view yesterday evening, Caelan Cassidy bowing out at the quarterfinals, where there was that whole wrangle about whether or not Ireland was going to send a team to the World Championships. You know, they were sending a team, they had appointed a manager. Then they decided, the HPU, this is the High Performance Unit, that they weren't, in fact, sending a team, only for the IABA then to decide that, yes, they were going to send a team to the World Championships. So, you know, that was sort of a snapshot into how sort of fractured and how broken Irish boxing is, and clear divisions between, you know, there aren't just clear divisions in the IABA itself, but there are clear and very distinct differences and difficulties between the IABA and its own high performance unit.
Okay, Chris, it does sound like there are a lot more questions than answers after today's appearance in front of the Oireachtas Committee. We will no doubt be talking to you about it again soon. Thank you so much for joining us. Paul Corrie, we are nearly out of time, but we do have a few minutes to talk about the First Division playoffs, which take place tonight. Bray Wanderers are playing Galway United and Treaty United against UCD. The first one is quite an interesting one. They have met recently. Just Galway United, I guess, with John Caulfield there, would be favourites to emerge from that one, do you imagine?
Yeah, you'd have to imagine. I mean, Bray have stuttered all season, and that's probably best summed up in their last kind of couple of games. You know, they've only won 5 of their last 7, and that's hardly ideal form heading into the playoffs. And they'll be hoping, in particular, Brian Maher, who's I mean, really pivotal to them, who plays in goal, has been involved with the Irish under 21s team. He picked up a knock recently, so they'll be looking, I guess, to have him fit tonight. And Galway, I mean, you mentioned it there, John Caulfield's obviously got huge experience around the League of Ireland. This is actually, and it's hard to believe, Marie, it's their fourth season in the First Division. There's an awful long team, or an awful long time for a team of that stature to be playing at that level. And you would imagine that they'll be hoping, last year they got knocked out in the playoff final by Longford, they'll be hoping to go one step clear. Rory Keating banging form for them, 10 league goals this season. He'll be very important for them if they're to go that one step further. And you would imagine, given where Galway finished, they finished just behind Shelburne in the league. Bray, like I mentioned, being quite a consistent, you would imagine that Galway would have enough to at least get through that game and hopefully kick on from there.
The other game then is Treaty United against UCD, your former club.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fingers crossed for the students tonight. I mean, Tommy Barrett, first and foremost, Marie, down at Treaty, deserves massive credit. You know, for anybody who's not aware, that team was literally assembled in 2 or 3 weeks before the season began on an absolute shoestring budget, gathering a number of players from kind of the local junior leagues. And I guess similar to Bray, his main concern will be the form of late. They've only won 2 of their last 10, so have kind of stuttered over the finishing line to actually get to the playoffs. And UCD have beaten them twice on 3 occasions. occasions this year when they've met. The one to look out for UCD is quite noticeably Colin Whelan has been involved with the Irish under-21s. He's banged in a number of goals this season for UCD. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he was to join Shamrock Rovers or somebody like that, given the connection that the two clubs have. He's probably somebody that Treaty need to keep out between himself, Liam Kerrigan and Paul Doyle. UCD have been the top goal scorers in the league, but they've also conceded a lot of goals. So Marcus Fields, never an easy place to go. You'd imagine Treaty be right up for that, be a big crowd down there, but I think over the course of the two legs, I'd probably fancy UCD. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was a UCD in Galway to kind of find it out in that first division playoff.
Okay, Paul Carey, thank you so much for joining us. So that first leg is on tonight, and then the second legs are taking place on Sunday, the 7th of November. That is all that we have time for. We'll be back tomorrow looking ahead to the Ireland-Japan game. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.